And good morning, everyone. Today I'm going to talk about TXFS, our transactional file system built by leveraging file system crash consistency to provide ACID transactions. So people use storage systems to store persistent structured data. But storage systems may fail in the middle of operations if there is a power loss or a kernel bug. Crash consistency ensures that after crash recovery, the application can still be recovered to a state that is correct and consistent. And what's more, applications sometimes can store persistent state across multiple files and storage abstractions. One example can be that an email client could store the attachment file as a raw file, and the path name of the attachment as an entry in a SQLite database. And we still want to expect crash consistency between all the files after a crash recovery. But currently, there is no POSIX mechanism that can atomically update multiple files. File-based applications need to build on file system primitives to ensure crash consistency. However, unfortunately, under POSIX standard, the only tool that the application writers can use is the sync family system calls, such as fsync. Fsync forces dirty data associated with a file to be durable before the call returns. As a result, it's very expensive, and a lot of applications just don't use it as much as they should, for example, Git. And this can result in complex, error-prone applications because the application writers need to write their own protocol, and sometimes they can be ad hoc. Let's take a look at an example here, the Android Mail client. Assume that we have an Android Mail client that receives an email with attachment. It stores the attachment as a regular file, a raw file, and it stores the name of the attachment as an entry in a database file. It's a file-based database, SQLite. It also stores the email text in SQLite database. So in total, we have three files involved here. One is the attachment file as a raw file, and we have two SQLite-related files, the database file, and also we need a log file in SQLite to maintain its internal consistency between its data and metadata. I'll take rollback log as an example here because it's the default mode for SQLite logging. In order to maintain crash consistency between the three files in total, the number of fsync calls necessary for an operation as simple as receiving an email with an attachment could take 6 fsyncs. So we have a lot of fsyncs here. One source of extra fsync we could have is from file creation and deletion, because file creation and deletion are actually writing the file content of the parent directory, so we need 2 fsyncs, one on the file to be created and another on the parent directory. That's the reason we have 2 fsyncs for the newly created attachment file, and we have 2 fsyncs for the rollback log, which gets created at the beginning of every transaction by its definition. And then we need fsyncs for the database file and also the commit record in the rollback log. Therefore, we have 6 fsyncs, quite expensive. In conclusion, POSIX lacks an efficient way to atomically update multiple files, like the attachment file and the 2 database-related files in the Android Mail example. So applications need to call a lot of fsyncs and use redundant writes in their own protocols, which can lead to poor performance. So we argue that file systems should provide transactional services. This is because transactions are well-defined interfaces and can provide high performance if they are correctly implemented and designed. But didn't transactional file system fail before? Actually, there are a lot of prior work, but they all have different shortages. They could be with complex implementation, hardware dependency, or with very high performance overhead, or with hard-to-use API. And we propose TXFS. We reduce the implementation complexity by reusing a mature, well-tested piece of code in the kernel, which is the file system journal, and we expanded to provide atomicity, consistency, and durability to user transactions. We also use customized techniques to different kernel-level data structures to implement isolation for transactions. TXFS provides very simple API so that a user only needs to call transaction begin, transaction end, or transaction abort system calls for a transaction. And once a transaction starts, which is a per-process transaction, all the file system operations after that will be automatically included in that transaction. So it's very easy to use. And here is an outline for the second half of the talk. Firstly, I'm going to introduce how we use the file system journal to provide atomicity, consistency, and durability guarantees for user transactions. And then I'll discuss how we implement isolation, which is the real challenge in our project. We carefully avoid false conflicts on global data structures and use customized conflict detection for different kernel data structures. Also, with the help of transaction API, the applications can implement some file system related optimizations. And finally, we evaluate TXFS to see whether it meets the needs for performance. As I talked before, we reuse a very mature and well-tested piece of code called journal inside the file system to provide atomicity, consistency, and durability to user transactions. TXFS is implemented on top of ext4, but it's not restricted to be implemented on ext4 only. As long as the file system provides a certain mechanism for atomic update, we can rebuild TXFS on top of that. So let's first take a look at how the ext4 journal looks, because our actual implementation is on ext4. And ext4 journal is actually a write-ahead log, which is called the JBD2 layer in the Linux kernel. And in ext4, there is one globally running in-memory file system transaction. And every time after a sync or a periodic flush, the content of this in-memory file system transaction will be flushed to an on-disk area called journal for atomic and persistent updates later. So how we are going to use it in TXFS? For every user transaction, we create a local file system transaction, which is similar to the JBD2 globally running transaction, so that we record transaction local state only to the local file system transaction. And when the transaction gets committed, we merge the local file system transaction into the globally running transaction so that later it can get atomically and persistent, so that later it can be written to the journal for atomic and persistent updates. So that's how we get atomicity, consistency, and durability for user transactions. And next, I'm going to discuss how we implement isolation. Isolation defines how concurrent transactions can be executed in parallel. In TXFS, we provide isolation at the level of repeatable reads. In order to do so, we make transaction private copies so that in-progress writes are only local to a kernel thread and cannot be read by other transactions. We detect conflicts by efficiently specialize different mechanisms to kernel data structures. And also we want to provide high performance, so we use fine-grained page logs instead of a single reader-writer log for every file. And we avoid false conflict detection. We avoid false conflicts, which I will introduce later with more details. Let's first take a look at an example about the actual problems we want to solve when implementing isolation. Firstly, let's take a look at process 1 and 2. they are trying to create files with the same file name under the same parent directory. And of course, we want to detect them to be conflicting with each other. And this is not allowed to be executed in parallel. But process 2 and 3 are creating files with different file names under the same parent directory. Although they are all trying to write to the parent directory file and also trying to make changes to some global data structures like block bitmap and inode bitmap, we don't want to detect them to be conflicting with each other because those are not real conflicts and they should be executed in parallel. How we avoid the conflict, the false conflicts on global data structures? The way we do so is that we split the file system functions into two parts. The part containing operations that modify locally visible state are executed immediately on private data structure copies so that those changes are all local. The other operations that modify the global state, such as the block bitmap, inode bitmap, superblock inode list, are delayed until commit points. So we avoid the false conflicts. We use customized techniques to isolate, for isolation to each data structure. For data pages, there is actually a very good unified interface within the page cache for the page access. So it's very easy to tell when a page is being accessed, whether it's a read or write access, and also when it is being accessed. As a result, we do copy on write, and correspondently, we do eager conflict detection so that we know the conflict happened at the time the page is being accessed. But for inodes and directory entries, they are being accessed everywhere in the file system, and sometimes a file system function just gets a pointer, and there is actually no very good way to tell at that point whether the data structure will be read or be written. Therefore, we do copy on read and do lazy conflict detection at commit time. And I'll discuss this with details in some later slides. So let's first take a look at the pages. Since we want higher scalability, we use fine-grained page locks so that concurrent writes in this figure from transaction 1 and 2, concurrent writes to different pages, even if they are under the same inode, meaning that they are from the same file, can be executed concurrently. But access from different transactions to the same page, like if they are all write access, they cannot be executed in parallel, and we detect them as a conflict. For inode and directory entries, as we discussed before, we use copy on write and lazy conflict detection. And we detect the conflict only at commit time by checking the timestamp. We reuse the C time in the inode for checking its globally modification time. And we create a similar field for directory entry. So let's only take inode as an example here. In the figure, the process 1's transaction first accessed the inode and made a copy at timestamp 1. But when the transaction gets committed, the global modification time of the global inode has already reached 2, which is later than timestamp 1, the access time of the transaction on the inode. So there has been another transaction or some non-transactional operation that has changed the inode, and there is a conflict, and we abort the transaction. But process 2's transaction first accessed and copied the inode at timestamp 3, which is later than the global modification time of the inode, which is 2. So we allowed transaction 2 to proceed. So here is an example about what are all the things happen for the isolation part when there is a file creation operation. So after a file creation, if it's inside the transaction, we create local directory entry and inode, which are only accessible starting from the local directory entry table. So it's local. And if there are new pages inserted into the Radix tree for that inode, it's also only accessible from the local inode, so all our local states. At commit time, we first lock all the data structures that will be updated with a global order from the following the original file system implementation to avoid deadlock. And then we do conflict detection. If the conflict detection gets passed, we copy back from the local state to the global state to update the global state. And after all the things have been done, we also finish up all the allocations so that the global inode and block bitmap, this kind of global data structures, gets updated. And this would happen for the isolation part. TXFS API is very easy to use. As we remember in the previous example of Android mail client, they need 6 fsyncs to do an operation that is as simple as receiving an email with an attachment. But with TXFS API, the application writer only needs to wrap all the operations on the attachment file and the database file, and without doing any operation like logging, they just wrap the operations with a pair of transaction begin and end. And after the transaction commit, the whole procedure is equivalent to only 1 sync compared to the 6 fsyncs in the original implementation. Transaction API can also help to implement file system optimizations. And this is because transactions give an indication from the application to the file system in the kernel about potential optimizations. One example, the group commit. Transactions can help pile up a lot of operations from the application, and they are all flushed to disk all at once. And also, transactions can help eliminate temporary durable files. Let's take a look at an example, the Vim editor. Vim uses a swap file for atomic update. But even without any changes to its protocol, we just wrap the protocol with a TXFS transaction. The operations on the swap file will never get written to disk. So we only have in-memory operations for the swap file. And without changing the protocol, we just wrap it with TXFS transaction. Now we get performance improvement. Also, transactions allow a fine-grained control of durability so that we can easily implement optimizations such as separating ordering from durability with non-durable transactions. And this work has been known as OSYNC. We implement TXFS on Linux kernel version 3.18 with 5,200 lines of code changes. But among them, 2,900 lines of code changes can be reused if we want to implement TXFS on other file systems other than EXT4. We do all the experiments on SSDs, and we port SQLite, TPCC, Android Mail, and Git to use TXFS transactions. And in some, each of the benchmarks shows different perspective of the system, like TXFS accumulates in-memory operations inside the transaction so that we get less I/O. And there is no need to call sync inside the transaction, so we get fewer number of sync calls. Transactions also batch all the operations so that we can get up to 30% or 60% performance improvement. And also, the Android Mail example shows that we can provide transactions across storage abstractions, so that there is no need for the application writer to implement their own ad hoc complicated protocols. And there is no need to call fsync between the raw file and other abstractions like SQLite database. And also, we use TXFS to provide stronger crash consistency guarantee to Git without performance overhead. Here is an example for a micro benchmark to show the file system optimizations transactions can do. You don't need to understand the code on the screen. It's just getting you a sense of how the protocol and the code changes roughly looks like. So we just wrap the whole protocol with a pair of transaction begin and transaction end, and without changing any code in between them, we can get 20% throughput increase. Of course, the application writer can further do some manual changes, such as remove all the operations on the logs, so that they can get 55% throughput increase in total. But without doing any manual changes, we can still get 20% throughput increase. We port Git to use TXFS transaction for crash consistency. The original Git implementation is vulnerable to garbage files and corruption because it's not calling fsyncs in the places they should be called for ordering operations. This is because they want high performance. But this could lead to possible loss of working tree, which is not even recoverable with a Git FSEK. TXFS transactions can make Git faster, can make Git fast and safe with no garbage file nor data corruption after the crash recovery. And TXFS is with no observable performance overhead in this case. We also port SQLite to use TXFS transactions. And we see that in update workload, TXFS is always faster than the other logging mode for SQLite. And in the insert workload, TXFS is still slightly slower than the rollback mode because rollback logs record the old states, and in insert workload, there is no old state, so there is nothing to be recorded. But you see that the rollback log is very slow in update workload. So in conclusion, people need storage systems to be crash consistent, which is hard to do, and we provide transactions to make applications to be simple and efficient. And we reused the file system journal to decrease the implementation complexity. And finally, we released our source code, and I'm happy to take questions. Thank you.
Hi, nice talk. My name is Fred Douglas, Perspective Labs. I have a minor question and a more major one. I'll start with a minor one. Your example of Vim was that you add transactions and you say you now could do it in memory. Mm-hmm. And I use Emacs, not BI. Let's not start that religious war. But I know Emacs has autosave files, and I thought the purpose of the Vim file was also to be able to recover it. And if you only keep it in memory and then the whole system crashes, you've lost your autosave. So is that your intent there?
We are actually using that example only to show how file system optimizations can be done. So it's just showing the file system optimizations. But I think you are right that there could be some partial swap file that could be helpful for the recovery.
But that's exactly my point, is that if you add a transaction and that causes the system not flush things that it would have otherwise flushed, then an application is going to actually have bad behavior. It's not going to have things persisted that it thought was going to be. Anyway, the other one, which is maybe more major, is that you gave an example where something reads some metadata and then it goes on, and then when it tries to commit, it finds out that the metadata was changed, and so it's aborted. So that sounds like optimistic concurrency control. In the context of a file system, I really worry that a long-running job ends up with a big transaction and gets starved because it basically always hits some conflict that causes it to revert. So how do you guarantee you don't starve processes?
Firstly, it's not strictly optimistic concurrency control because we are not executing them on disk, so that it's not first being executed and then get recovered on abort. But we are only aborting the in-memory state, so it's.
But you're still losing work, right?
Yeah, there is still overhead in memory. So you are right in the sense that there will be memory overhead during the transaction, even if it's an abort. So,
but what this really means is that all these transactions are meant to be small things, not long-running things that might persist over many seconds or minutes.
Yeah.
Is that fair? Okay.
Okay, so we have one more minute. Let's try to take both questions, but I might stop. Okay. You don't have to.
Related to the previous question, if I were a bad person, could I sort of delay all transactions by, let's say, keeping deleting and adding and removing files to, let's say, temp or var or something? Like, could I delay transactions by causing them to keep aborting if I were a bad person?
Yeah, I think you are asking about liveness, right?
Liveness, but in terms of security, like if I were really a bad person.
Yeah, I think it's totally possible.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
But we expect that the application writers should be good enough.
All right, no, sure. They could do it anyway, right? Yeah, thank you.
So while the next speaker is setting up, let's take another question.
Okay, thanks. So, interesting talk. So how does it coexist with MMAP? Like if I have a memory mapped file and can have the flasher writing it again and again into the log updated versions, how does it coexist?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question. Honestly, I haven't implemented TXFS on MMAP, so MMAP is not supported.
Thank you.
But I think it's not a fundamental issue. Thank you.